Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Hello, everybody. Chuck Bonnell, Julie Hayden, a true straight up. And boy, do we need two straight up more than ever. Brought to you by...
AmericaCitizenPress.com and Denver Center Agendix and Dr. Julie McCandlin. And hey, it's Party Friday.
It is Party Friday. That's right.
We are...
Daughter's birthday. So.
It's right. We actually are having a party at our house. All the important people will be there. My daughter, I can't believe this. She turns 36. Oh, how is that possible? And I'm only like 37. Like, yeah, I know. It's like...
I had a child of two. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing how that works. Hey, we're going to be getting Scott S. Powell coming up in a moment. He's an author of a book called Rediscovering America. We've had him on before. He's great. I want to talk about, I was kind of promoting it this way. Biden says everything's Putin's fault. Even if your hair turns out bad from now on, that's Putin's fault as well.
Yeah,
oh, that's Putin's fault.
Come on.
And you know, it's like, why?
No joke.
Why, really? Why can we not focus on solutions? Well, it's because the globalist elite progressives won't let him focus on the solution. And Scott Powell is going to talk about that, saying this whole thing is just sort of a step toward that their end goal. Oh, this is from Leo. Julie, I came to the realization today that deciding what to drink in a Party Friday is probably a first world problem. It is, Leo, but you'll be glad to know. I call my daughter. That's a nice thing. We have a 10-year-old, 11-year-old now, Rev, but an adult daughter is also fun. Because I said, look, I'm not sure what we're going to do for dinner, but we do have the basics. We have bundt cakes and vodka.
It's not Russian vodka, is it?
No, it's not Russian vodka.
Okay. Where's Tito's come from? Yeah, how do you know it's not Russian vodka?
You know, If I can eat Chick-fil-A French fries, waffle fries, I can drink Russian vodka. That was a total aside. Wanted to talk to him about that. And then coming up at 3:30, we're hoping to get Maurice Emmer. He's one of the lawyers. We've read the actual Tina Peters indictment, and I cannot tell you what a bunch of hooey, and that's a really polite word for it. The whole thing is hooey.
We do have Scott Powell with us and back to the show. Scott, great to have you back.
Oh, it's wonderful to be with you again and your audience.
Like, thank you so much. So, you know, Scott, I don't know if you're aware of this, but everything is Putin's fault. Everything is Putin's fault. I paid $4 at the gas station today to fill my car. That's Putin's fault.
Our child misbehaved. That's Putin's fault.
Yeah, child misbehaving is Putin's fault. I mean, everything's Putin's fault. But I wanted to talk to you because Biden, we can't really do solutions because the globalist elite progressives won't let him, right? I mean, this whole thing, and you had a great column where you were talking about this, it's part of sort of a master globalist plan. At least that's what I think.
World
what about
economic.
You? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that we have a very large invisible player. People refer to this player as the deep state. The deep state has many levels to it. Certainly, there are many people in our government that are part of this deep state, but none of them are really making the ultimate decisions on global strategy. World Economic Forum types, the Rothschild family and so forth, that the international banking crowd that controls most of the central banks of the world that really constitute the real decision-making of this deep state. And they have talked about a great transition for years. And that great transition is for the dissolution of borders so that the sovereignty of America would be subordinated to a new globalist order.
Well, you know, that's why we're all supposed to. I see my liberal friends are like, why are you whining about high gas prices? Look what's happening in Ukraine. It's like, what though? Let me ask you this, because this is one thing I think that needs to be explained in terms of what's in it for the world economic foreign types. Is it
so they don't have enough money, enough power?
Control. Is it power, control, money, philosophy?
It's power and control. Let's think even bigger.
Okay.
This is a spiritual battle that we're in between good and evil, truth and falsehood. And the globalist powers are really evil people. They want to control and reduce the population of the world. They've said as much. They want to reduce the population of the world by 80 to 90% even. 80% reduction in population. Well, how do you get there? You've got to kill people.
Right.
These are Nazis.
Right. Well, it's like in the Marvel comic books Endgame, right? When Thanos just goes like that. Well, what? And so it's philosophy. It's like they're in control. How do they make more money out of all of us as they go through this?
Well, they've been making money all the way along in various ways. I mean, banks are very good at when they aggregate all the money, they can leverage it and make more money off other people's money. That's what banks do. But then they, by choosing winners and losers in the economy, that's why the Great Reset, to some extent, one of the key elements of it is this transformation away from fossil fuels to renewable energy, right? That's a major transition to go through. But you can bet that they intend to make a lot of money in that transition, even if it impoverishes people, even if it cuts the energy supply, because the reality is that we can't just turn on the switch to renewable energy right now and survive. We need fossil fuels. They are the most cost efficient fuels in the world.
Well, I was going to say, and then you throw out, I mean, and the whole thing is a lie. I mean, there are a few lies in there. One, that somehow or another, we can't use our own fossil fuel, but we can buy Venezuela. So that's stupid. Secondly, so that's great that you have the electric vehicle, but when you plug it in, well, what's fueling that? And third,
the electricity.
The stuff that you use to make electric vehicles in the first place is a non-renewable. I mean, it's just a different thing that we have to mine.
And no one even talks about the costs and the risks of lithium,
the batteries.
How do you dispose of these massive lithium batteries?
Right.
Well, you put them on a boat,
and no one talks about the defacing of beautiful nature with fields of solar panels and windmills. Right.
Right. Oh no.
Exactly. I frankly don't get warm feelings when I see these things.
No.
By looking at the great panorama that God created with fields and meadows and mountains and rivers. I don't want to see those things interrupted by man-made, ugly, uniform acres and acres of solar panels. Thank you.
What is George Soros penned an article today in which he said the world needs to get rid of Xi Jinping and our friend Putin to save our civilization. So what's George up to?
Well, I am not an expert on George Soros. Obviously, he's had a bit of a falling out. I think he never was close to the former Russian oligarchs and the newer oligarchs. I mean, Soros goes back many years now. But I thought that, he certainly the people in the World Economic Forum and Soros is one of those higher level people there. They look to China as an economic model, as the best model of an economy, which is an authoritative capitalist system.
Yeah, so did Trudeau. Really, Trudeau loves the communist system.
It'll never really work. You've got to, only free markets really can allocate resources efficiently, and they have to be free. They can't be driven by, central, government authorities directing resources to this sector or that sector. It's never worked.
Right. One thing that I've noticed that it started with, I think it's been slowly creeping up on us, but they aren't even pretending anymore, is we saw, for instance, with the trucker convoy in Canada, right, where the GoFundMe people were just going to take the money, where banks were saying, we're not going to process the money. All of a sudden now the United States says, okay, banks, we're not going to, you know, banks, the banks aren't going to like go let Russia do business with them. I mean, all of a sudden we've got number one.
Or Mike Lindell, all of a sudden they're adverse to having money from people they don't politically approve of.
I mean, so you've got that going on. At the same time, you've got this weird push for anybody who doesn't toe the party line is an extremist and an insurrectionist. And I think that, so for instance, and you put out misinformation, you've got DuckDuckGo is now doing a Twitchy, which is a kid's gamer, you know, streaming device, is now, you know, putting, labeling things as misinformation. And all of that, is that part of what you see as part of their sort of master plan for power and control?
Oh, absolutely. If you can control information, knowledge and information, and the dissemination of it through the educational system, that includes K through 12, the universities and the media, you can control society. We already know that. I mean, we've arrived at this point because of a long march through the cultural institutions, which are the schools, the universities, Hollywood, the media,
sports, everything.
That's why we have wokeism today, right?
Yeah,
wokeism
right.
didn't just spring up. It had to be, you had to cultivate the environment for wokeism to really take root. And so you brainwash people, you dumb them down, you separate them from their heritage so they don't even understand the virtues of our system. I mean, think about it. Most woke young people, they fancy themselves as, you know, as revolution. Some of them fancy themselves
right.
as innovators, as creative
right.
people. You know, wanting to, you know, chart their own course. You know, they're the type that in the fork of the road, they want to go the direction that the other people don't take. All that sort of idealism, right? That characterizes woke young people. They lose all of that under the system that is unfolding right before our very eyes that they tacitly support.
Well, and in the meantime, the poll that indicated they would all flee if we were attacked, too. It's like, great.
So maybe we should attack if they'd all flee. But it's no different than in the 60s, where people like Pete Seeger would be playing these wonderful songs about communism and at least indirectly about communism. And of course, if he was in a communist country, he'd been in a jail cell by the time he hit 20 and never let out. So it's nothing new. The left is hugging philosophies that will destroy them.
That's right.
This is another question, and I don't know if you've given any thought to it, but one of the other things that I don't understand is they try to build this brave new world. This whole weird, and I would also, like you, characterize it as this evil trend to completely sexualize our children. And the whole gender thing and transgender thing, how does that fit in? Is it, sometimes I think it's just like telling,
destroy the patriarchy.
Well, yeah. I mean, because that's become huge anymore. How does that fit in, do you think?
Well, that's why it's so important to get back to what I was talking about, a spiritual battle. Mm-hmm. And that spiritual battle is being good and evil. When we say good, that all good comes from our creator God. He created us, you know, man, either male or female. And we find fulfillment in our lives and fulfillment and flourishing when we identify with how we're created and we live our lives according to the plan of that creation. And this isn't to get into any argument, you know, against anybody, but, you know, we saw that feminism really hurt relations between men and women. And I'm not blaming women in particular.
Men.
Homosexuality brought a further, you know, kind of weakening of the marital relationship between a man and a woman. Remember, marriage is created for joy and fulfillment and procreation. You can't get children out of gay couples. It doesn't happen. But now we're at the final stage. And the final stage is that we're dividing men and women against themselves through the transgender movement. And this is sort of the last stage of trying to bring us down and demoralize us and weaken us. All these agendas are hurting people and confusing people. People that have gone through the transgender changes, you know, can start with hormone treatments, but then ultimately people actually try to become the other gender. Many of them have horrible outcomes. You know, they're unhappy. They can't find their own way. They're confused. Suicide rates are sky high in that group of people. Why would parents want to open that door for their children if they love their children?
Well, they do.
Want to affirm your child as a boy or a girl. Period. End of story.
There was a great Hollywood thing where the unmarried actresses would go over to Africa, adopt some African kids, but that's no longer everything. Now it's that you have to have your kids identify as transgender. Because if your kids appear to be heterosexual, that's awful. But if they can say their kid is going through a transgender stages, and everybody goes, oh, hooray, congratulations. And so there are people out there kind of, Tommy, you know.
Well, he can't talk, so he can't, he's only, you know, one and a half. Well,
it really reflects how lost our culture is. Say it's decadent. Yes, it's decadent. But this is a violation of very fundamental things. You don't want to cause your children, you don't want to project on your children your fantasies that hurt your children.
Yeah. At any level, you're right.
That's insanity. That's selfish. That's wrong. Right. And, I live in Florida, and our governor recently made an executive order that prevents introduction of transgender ideology in schools.
It's state law
all the way through high school or up certain grades.
It's up to third grade, kindergarten, grade.
Outrageous.
I mean that's a start. It really needs to be.
And so,
it really needs to be all the way through school, frankly.
And
you know, young people, they're not fully mature. You know, they have bad judgment. We know, we've always known that.
Right.
So, you know, we don't allow them to drink before a certain age because, you know, they might hurt themselves. They might get in a car wreck. We don't allow certain things because we recognize that young people don't have, they're not mature enough to handle those choices. And this is the very same thing, isn't it?
Right. Well, I mean, one thing that gives me hope, and I want to get your take on this, is, I kind of have been on a theme here lately that part of the problem the left has is, to them, truth, it's fluid. It's whatever you can get people to believe. It's whatever a bunch of people like on your Twitter feed. That's truth.
It's Putin's fault.
And the actual truth has nothing to do, but they're pushing up against some very basic truths that people can see. For instance, people can see masks don't work. The vaccine didn't prevent COVID.
Lockdowns didn't
work. That inflation is not temporary. Men cannot have babies. I mean, they're trying to shove stuff down our throats that people, you know, can turn around and say, well, that actually isn't true, no matter how many likes you got on it.
No, you're so right. I mean, that's a source of hope now, I think, more than we had, say, you know, 3 and 4 years ago and before, that these false narratives are being blown up. People are seeing that they have been lied to. They've been deceived. They've embraced ideas that have bad outcomes. And they're going to see it more probably, you know, over the next year and 2 years. We just don't know. But the numbers negative effects from vaccination and deaths from vaccination.
Right.
That's going to be hit as long as they can hide it.
I think you're right there. I have a feeling that's one of the reasons why they wanted to pivot away from that so quick. Is like, that's not even talking
about it. No, you're so right. So they're pivoting now. The next big agenda, you know, that's why I wrote that I felt that the deep state really pushed this Russia-Ukraine war as a diversionary tactic away from the crumbling narratives,
right,
and the exposure,
right,
the exposure of vote fraud. I mean, I will return to this. I will not let this one go. When you have an appreciation for the United States from its inception, Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, and the legitimacy of our country, of our government coming from the people, that it's a system based on the people. It's of the people, by the people, for the people.
Yeah.
So the people's voice needs to be heard, and it's heard most distinctly in a constitutional republic through voting. So voting integrity is everything,
yeah,
to our,
right,
system.
Right.
And if we don't have voting integrity, we do not have a future as a constitutional republic. We're already seeing the consequences. We have an installed, illegitimate president, and look at all the problems we have.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
And they're not, the market.
And we're the laughing stock of the world, to be truthful.
Right. Yes. Well,
he's brought us back to leadership and respect, and,
yeah,
and is able to send some of the best and the brightest abroad. Kamala Harris has been knocking them out over in Ukraine and Romania.
And Hungary.
Hungary giggling her way to a word. I mean, and we all say, well, you know, sure, she's
no, Chuck, you're being racist.
Well, of course, I'm being racist and sexist, but it's wonderful that you put on the world stage an example of a total idiot. I mean, you know, she's sitting next to these presidents who have their good and bad characteristics themselves, but they're not raging fools, and people ask them questions, and Kamala appears to be a dimwit. I mean, it's just really amazing that we're willing to put out.
Well, not we. There's no we there.
Well think about it. We have two dimwits,
yes,
as the president and the vice president. The executive branch of our government now has dimwits running it, and we know that they're there because they are dimwits, and
right,
they can be controlled,
right,
by the people behind them.
Yep.
The deep state is having a field day,
right,
in manipulating American policy right
well,
now.
Well, what do you think is next? One of the things I think is, to the Biden administration careens from crisis to crisis as diversion. What did somebody, I think Wayne Allen Root had a weapon of mass distraction, right, a WMD. So in my experience, like, nobody even remembers Afghanistan. That's like so old.
Right.
It's like, were we at war with them? So Ukraine, I think people too, you know, people are like, well, nothing's really happening. I give it, I don't know how much longer, but certainly before the midterms, I think people will be over it to a certain extent. What will they do, or what do you think they're plotting next to distract us and to try to control and power,
destroy everything.
Well, remember, you always have to think of what are the levers to control society. They're all about control shaping things, and fear is one of the things they've used effectively. So
yeah,
I believe that, you know, they're going to be hyping the fear of climate change, of carbon emissions, and the need to accelerate. I mean, even if we don't accelerate, the commitments that have already been made, you know, to becoming a carbon-free, having carbon-free parts of our economy by 2030, that's only 8 years away.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
We're going to have 10 billion carriers promised to help with the climate change agenda to the UN. And of course, we have the gender equity. I think there's 32 billion, so some huge numbers going out across the world to help the world out. And they're going to be so appreciative, and it's going to help America.
But so they're going to hype the fear. But, you know, they've been trying that, though, and it hasn't worked. Do you think they're just going to forget trying to, they're just going to basically just just double down?
I think they will double down, yes.
Right.
But they always, you know, there's always a next card to play. So
yes. Well, particularly when the truth doesn't matter.
We have to. And the important thing for American people, and your audience needs to, needs your audience is probably already pretty well educated because of the great work that you do in educating them. And I thank you for that. But deception is the master strategy always. And that goes right back to the fall of man. It wasn't an outright lie, but it was deception that was used, right? Mm-hmm. Deception is the main tool that our adversaries use. And so we all have to be wise and discerning about deception and call it out and push it back.
Yeah,
because,
good point.
Because we can't allow falsehood to take root in our society. We've already seen the consequences
right.
by us being too passive.
Right.
We should have been pushing back years ago about against all these things.
Well, that's one nice thing about Ron DeSantis. I mean, he is pushing back. He is pushing back against Disney CEO. And we're talking with Scott Powell, the author and lecturer and his book, Rediscovering America.
And you know what? And Scott, let me do this because we're running out of time here. And I appreciate you coming on so much because you're great.
Absolutely.
Where can people get your book if they want to read more?
Well, let me just give a little bit of let me tell your audience
why
the book is so readable. I wrote this book not for fame or fortune, but really to save the country, to wake the country up. And the book is short; it's only about 200 pages plus a little bit. It's broken up into 14 very readable chapters. I work long and hard in making this a book with no excess, no fluff. It's very direct. It's well written. Every chapter is satisfying. It's like a short story. So for someone that doesn't read a lot of books, it's a great book to get a hold of. And it'll give you hope about the future, unlike most other history books, which just give you a narrative of who, what, when, and where. My book addresses why did things happen? Why was there success? How did people overcome impossible odds? Because we're facing impossible odds now, aren't
we? Yeah.
Yes.
Well, so we learn from the past and see what they did. I identify 9 qualities of character that enabled people to overcome impossible odds. And if we embrace these qualities of character, and the first one really is belief and faith and reliance on God. All our great leaders overcame great obstacles, great impossible odds by faith. They knew that they couldn't do it by themselves, but with God's help, they could overcome. And that also instills, a kind of courage. In other words, it's not just me alone. I have, I have God behind me. You have courage. You have resilience. So when things don't go right and you fall down, you can get up and proceed. And you can persist in things. So all these qualities, and there are more, are all articulated in the book. So one could read the book and say, wow, this is kind of a self-help book as well.
Yeah. And save the country and help yourself.
Yeah. And so the book now is available at Barnes & Noble. I think the supply has come back. We have these supply chain problems. So while the book is printed and bound, and it's a beautiful book, I've had more people comment about the cover. The cover alone sells the book. And so I think Amazon is going to get more books, but right now Barnes & Noble has plenty of books. So it's easy to order it online there. Easy to, I don't know that all stores have it, but you assume that they probably do. Barnes & Noble does not have that many stores left. So I think they distribute probably widely.
Right. But you can get it there online. Well, Scott, thank you
so much. Thank you, Scott. We love having you on.
Appreciate your time. Yeah, appreciate. Have a great weekend.
Well, let's do it again. You've got a great audience, and I really want to commend you for the great work that you're doing.
Well, thank you.
All right. Well, thanks to you too.
It's appreciated. All right.
All right. Thank you. Thank you.
And I love Colorado, by the way. I ski there. I take a 1 week ski trip every year from Florida, and I went to Colorado.
Oh, that's kind of funny. And we're going to Florida later on, too. So
okay. Well, look me up if you're in my neighborhood. We'll have
All right.
We'll have coffee or lunch or something. Okay, wonderful.
Thank you. That sounds wonderful. Yep. Scott S. Powell there, his book, Rediscovering America. You know, he had a really good point. I mean, I had never even thought about those terms that, you know, that everything bad started with deception. Mm-hmm. And that is something that they rely on, right? They rely on people not knowing the truth, not hearing the truth, not understanding the truth. And they make it harder and harder to talk about the truth, you know?
Well,
That's the key to it all. So we're hoping to get in. I don't know, Thomas, were you able to get hold of Maurice yet? Maurice Emmer was in was going to talk to us about the Tina Peters case. Because speaking about the truth, okay, he's trying him now. So we did what Maurice, we had him on Wednesday, and he said, you know, do you think any of the reporters actually read the indictment? And I guarantee you they did not, because if they did, they would have gone like, what? I mean, it's astonishing what they are actually accusing her of doing, and this hullabaloo. And then I was...
Well, it's online, and you ought to read it, because, you know, most indictments, they set out the facts, and then they go from there to what the indictments are, et cetera. Here, they just give you the indictments first, because they don't want to have to go through the beginning part, because it makes no sense.
It makes no sense.
And they
all
have definitional parts, and they have statutory parts, and it's all. But they figure they have to tell you exactly what the statute says, because they imply that merely talking to a public servant is a form of corruption.
Right. So they have 10 counts, right? And if you read the mainstream media, you're like, oh my God, she must be like, you know, sort of like Putin or something like that. So, and it's not really clear, and it's confusing to me, but it seems as if, like Maurice was indicating on Wednesday, that what they're accusing her of doing is trying to influence a public official by calling the public official and saying, look, what Tina Peters wanted to do was, when they were going to come in and wipe the systems and the Dominion people were going to do their thing, that she wanted to have it open to the public in the interest of transparency.
And that apparently is a crime.
And so she called and asked for that, and they said no. And then she called somebody else, and they said no. And she's being indicted for that. Now, I'm not clear if it's that, or when you go through, when you read everything, I think the bottom line is, and I'm not saying she's guilty, because I don't think she's guilty of anything. What they're accusing her also of doing is hiring somebody, using a fake name for that person, then hiring them to go observe what Dominion did. And that's it. Now, the person didn't do anything,
They're not accused of doing anything, but they start out telling you that these images from the Dominion machine, as well as the passwords, appeared on the internet. And that never comes up again. So she's not charged with pirating those images and putting them on the internet or anything else. They just, you're supposed to make that assumption somehow, because apparently they have no idea how it got on the internet, and they don't think they can prove Tina Peters did it.
So Tina Peters had indicated that she never even had the passwords to begin with. It was all Dominion. So it looks like Maurice is still in his court hearing. So let me go ahead, and hopefully we can get him. If not, we'll get him back later. So the bottom line is, so you read all this and you'd think, like I said, that she was some kind of god-awful war criminal, murdering kind of person. And in the end, the main accusation against her is that after the Secretary of State's office told her that she couldn't have this stuff open to the public, she hired somebody, used a fake name, and then that person went in. Now, that person's, nobody did anything. That person just watched, apparently, or gave her advice. I mean, whatever, but that's it. And the most outrageous thing is, when they arrested her, they put her bail on that at $500,000, $500,000 cash only bail. Now, murderers don't get that, right? Murderers don't get that. So there's a person who, you look at these charges, and Tina Peters, by the way, denies it and says she wasn't doing anything. The other thing that outraged me about this is the indictments assume that Jenna Griswold is right, and that Tina Peters has no rights, right? Which is totally not the case. That's part of the counterclaims in the lawsuit. Tina Peters is saying, I had every right to do what I did. And instead, the crooked DA turns around and says, well, that's a crime. And then they put her in jail for $500,000 bond. Now, keep in mind, the guy, Matthew Dolev, who shot and killed the Trump supporter, they just dropped all the charges.
Oh, he's fine.
Against him. That's okay. Yeah. Right. But Tina Peters, I tell you what, guys, Tina Peters' only crime was questioning the election. she was questioning the election, and that was her crime. And that's why the only reason they set that bond so high is they wanted her to spend the night in jail, because they wanted to send a message to anyone else who questions the election. We will come after you. We will get you. We will put you in jail.
But so she appears by Zoom the next day, and the judge sets the bail at $25,000, I mean, for her and $10,000 for her associate. You really do have an abuse.
It is crooked as all get out.
Well, he's a Republican. There are lots of crooked Republicans out there.
You've got, particularly in this day and age, and I disagree with some of these policies, where they're letting people who carjack people who assault people, all kinds of people out on a no bond, right? They release them almost immediately.
All right, we've got Maurice Emmer with us, thankfully. Maurice, thanks for getting on the phone with us.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm a little late because the hearing just ended here at the courthouse in Denver.
Okay. How'd your hearing go?
Can you talk about that? Or?
Yeah, sure. I can talk about it if you like.
Yeah,
sure.
Maybe, Bonnie.
Update
on that. So this is the lawsuit that Ron Hanks and a number of people have filed. I mean, can you explain what the lawsuit was, and then what was the hearing, and then what happened?
Yeah, sure. So briefly, it was filed by Ron Hanks and two county clerks and three county commissioners. And then Ron dropped out of the case because he's really too busy with his campaign and his legislative work. But it doesn't matter that he's not a plaintiff anymore, because the others carry on. So it's a case involving the illegality of the voting systems in Colorado for several reasons that they're illegal. And also it's a challenge to election rules that Jenna Griswold promulgated in the fall, earlier actually in the summer as emergency rules, and then in the fall as permanent rules. So that's what the lawsuit's about. And the attorney general represents the Secretary of State in things like this. They filed a motion to dismiss the case, and this was an argument, oral argument on the motion to dismiss.
Okay. Now, did the judge rule,
so or
is the judge going to rule, or what?
No, normally they would not rule. It's a pretty complicated issue, a set of issues, and it would be very unusual for him to have ruled from the bench. He wanted to hear the arguments, and he had a lot of questions for both sides. He came prepared with a lot of questions. And then he announced that he had a jury trial coming up immediately, which could consume him for a few weeks before he could get back to this. So I wouldn't expect a decision very soon.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you guys for doing that. And thank you for updating us. Let me switch over then to the Tina Peters case. We took your advice, Chuck and I, and read the indictment. And before you came on, I was like, it's just a bunch of garbage. But I have a question for you.
Well, it's bizarre. I mean, you get to the end of it and you expect more
pages.
You're
like, what was the crime?
Why are the signatures? Where are the rest of the pages?
Were they accusing her of trying to influence a public official by simply repeating her request to have this be open to the public? Is that the crime, or is it just that they told her no, and then she brought this other person in allegedly? Or can you tell?
Well, it's hard to tell.
Okay.
For those who don't know anything about criminal law, really, there's no such thing as like common law, criminal law. So there's no crime unless there's a statute.
Right.
It was adopted by the state legislature that says this is a crime. And the statute has, every statute has what they call elements. So it will recite, you know, it is first degree, let's say, theft to do the following things. And it'll list things that have to be present for the crime to have been committed. And if any of those elements is missing, there's no crime. It's
right.
It's just kind of like common sense. It's, you've got to go by the definition. Ah. So I have to admit, I've never done criminal work. I haven't seen indictments before, but this looked really weird to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, you've read it. So you saw they went through and they said they had 13 conclusory charges. And so when I say conclusory, they just say Peters and Nicely violated this statute, or right. Peters violated that statute, or nicely, and they don't tell you why, you know, like right. what are the facts?
Right, because
so then they have a long recitation of a bunch of election rules,
right.
followed by a long recitation of a bunch of alleged facts, and right. they never go back and say, it's Here's these facts in. That support this
yeah,
charge.
Right.
So,
and I'm going to tell you.
Yeah, it's like a jigsaw puzzle.
It is. And Maurice, I've read a bazillion. I was a reporter for 30 years. I've read a bazillion indictments. And normally, you don't really have at the end of a criminal indictment all this weird recitation. Normally, it's in the charges. And they explain on this day and age.
Count
one is this. And they did this. Because the way I read it is they charged her for with all these counts of attempting to influence a public official because she was simply calling him up and he asked.
Well, they don't say what the violation
right.
was. They
Which
just,
means it, that,
they just make the conclusory opinion that
it's
that,
a crime
that she used deception in order to call them, or
it's
and they don't say what the deception was.
But the deception was exactly, and it'd be if you read that, it'd be like if you called your state legislator and said, "Hey, you know, I want you to vote for this bill." All of a sudden, that's a crime. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And the other thing that was so outrageous to me is, like you said, when they go through all these election laws, they assume that Jenna Griswold is right and that Tina Peters has no authority to challenge her or come to her own conclusions, which is not true at all. I mean, Tina Peters is the elected clerk and recorder there. I mean, I've never seen anything like that. It was, and to look at the media, like you said, you'd think, I was saying, you know, she was a war criminal or a murderer or something.
Well, have you heard the term talking indictment? You ever heard that term,
yes.
talking indictment?
Yes.
So this impresses me as a talking indictment. And what that means is that it's really intended to communicate information
right.
not
yeah.
to the courts and
right.
not to the defendant, but to right. other people.
Right. And
that's why you include all that other BS.
Right.
All
right.
the other BS.
Right.
It's intended for a wider audience. Yeah.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
And Sanders asking so, who and, filed
it
a
also,
Let
sorry.
Me just clarify this. So she's saying sorry. One of our listeners is put typed in the chat room who filed a complaint against Tina Peters. What it was, Sandra, it was an indictment. The district attorney took it to a grand jury where, of course, they present only what they want to present. And the grand jury handed down these indictments. Well, let me ask you this, too. This is the other thing. So there's nothing in there about violence. There's nothing in there about danger to a community. Like I said, her only crime was questioning the election, and they wanted her to spend a night in jail. I mean, I've never seen something like this where they set a $500,000 bond,
all cash bond.
And
the next day it's brought down to $25,000.
I mean, that's like, that's crazy. That's not crazy. That's just
abuse
evil.
Of process.
Right.
Well, I don't know where the $500,000 came from, and maybe that's what the DA asked for. It
right.
was a ridiculous request because obviously, even if you accept the indictment at face value and say, okay, she did these things, which, by the way, we don't know because it's only an indictment. It's just you think in an indictment they're going to include exculpatory information?
Right.
I don't think
right.
so.
Right.
But even if she did all these things, they don't justify a huge
no.
bail. She's not a flight risk. They took her passport, as they
right.
normally do, and they gave her an order to stay in the state. And if she leaves the state, they'd have grounds to arrest her again. So I'm sure she's going to stay in the state until
well,
the next
her father
period.
Died the night before.
I mean,
she
didn't get permission.
It was just
to punish her.
It's disgusting.
Let me move on to something else I wanted to
yeah.
talk about. Because
yeah.
we have a lot of our listeners that
sure.
have commented on this. So then Christy Burton Brown, the chairperson of the state Republican mm-hmm. Party, decides in her effort to be non-intervening or getting involved,
neutral.
To be neutral in her decision to be neutral, suggests that Tina Peters quit. And you know, not
demand.
No, I mean, to
and,
me,
and that's a clear violation of her obligation to be neutral.
On its face.
I mean, it's just absurd. You know, it isn't up for Christy Burton Brown to tell candidates to get rid of their campaigns. That's expressly prohibited. And so she expressly violates that. And then she cons poor Marilyn and Priscilla to go along with her because they want to be above reproach. I mean, it is a certain amount of the establishment Republican Party that is repulsive in this state, just repulsive.
Yeah, may I tell you an anecdote?
Sure.
Sure.
That relates to that. Yeah. So I happened to be at a party luncheon in Pitkin County 2 days ago. Christy Burton Brown was visiting, so there was a luncheon to host her. Mm. And Tina Peters showed up along with her bishop. And Tina came, I'm sure, to give her pitch because she's running for the Secretary of State's nomination.
Right.
And everything was pretty civil until Tina and Sharona had to leave. And then a few minutes later, Sharona came back. She was not happy. She had seen the press release, I guess. And she confronted Christy, I think justifiably, there for all to hear. How could you sit here across from Tina through the lunch and not bother to mention that you had issued this morning? Okay, so that's the first I knew about it. I'll be frank with you. I think this justifies Christy Burton Brown's resignation, and I think it might justify the resignation of the other two officers, depending on what more might be learned about them. I suspect Christy was behind it.
Oh, I've been
very open.
I immediately
sent an email to Christy and others saying, I read this press release, and it starts out with Christy's attempting to justify her demand, and then it ends. This is interesting. And then it ends with a paragraph from Joe Jackson, the executive director of the state party, saying, "Hey, we're impartial."
Well, we'll have nothing else more to say about this because we want to maintain our neutrality.
I said, hold on. First, you crap all over Tina, and then Joe sprays room freshener on it. I mean, come on.
Well, and I would want to ask Christy Burton Brown, did you read the indictment? Because if you read the indictment, I think if anyone who actually read the indictment, not just the mainstream progressive corporate media's, interpretation of it, which was hand fed to them by the DA's office. I mean, even if you're Christy Burton Brown, I could see her saying something.
She read it because I know Priscilla read it. But it's just that.
Well, then how come they didn't say what? What does this mean?
Because you're sitting there with legal counsel and everybody else and all the Lundeen and others who are all going, we're right on the verge of victory. And now this, you have to do something. We must be saved from this. You must issue it immediately and take, look at this. Look at the allegations. Allegations aren't necessarily proven fact. It doesn't matter. That was a disgraceful performance, just a disgraceful performance. But I don't think the majority of the SEC will vote to recall her, though she deserves to be recalled.
Well, regardless of whether she gets recalled or not, I would encourage, and I am encouraging, every registered Republican to write emails and letters to their county organizations and to the state party demanding her resignation.
Yeah, I agree.
And you can't make her resign, but I think you can make it crystal clear that she has lost whatever trust she might have had among a very large swath of Republicans in the state of Colorado. That's what I would encourage.
And to put a little bit of history in it, there have been times when there have been Democrat candidates who have gotten in trouble, and everybody jumps up and down and demands that the party, say something to them. And then the Democrat Party comes back and says, it's not up to us. We don't take a role in that. I'll give Dick Wadhams credit. I mean, he's not always
credit for what?
Well, back when, remember when Dan Mays was running for, there have been times, I guess what I'm saying is when there have been candidates and issues have come up. And in the past, I've seen both Democrats and Republicans maybe privately wishing that this would all go away, but publicly saying nothing and publicly saying we can't say anything. That's not our role.
Well, you should have heard Dick on, and I love Dick. He's a friend.
But
when he went on Peter's show yesterday or the day before yesterday and said he loved the statement by Christy Burton Brown.
And that
she should absolutely suspend her campaign. So if he had morals about it, he's gotten rid of them.
Well, here's an interesting thing to think about. Those three officers whose names are on that press release sit on a tribunal hearing complaints about others allegedly violating the bylaws of the state party.
Yes, they do.
And here they are committing a really huge, I'll tell you which bylaw it is. It's Roman 3, subsection C, that calls for impartiality in primary elections. That's unequivocal. It doesn't say accept this or accept that. It's unequivocal. And so here they are. Where's their moral standing to sit in judgment of others after this?
Well, that particular clause is only imposed against grassroots people.
Yeah.
There are an incredible number of exception people that it does not apply to. So it's just simply.
That's in the really, really fine print.
Yeah, it's a parenthetical. But this applies only to grassroots individuals.
Well, let me just a couple questions.
No, never...
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to ask real quick, when you said that Sharona came back in and confronted Christy Burton Brown, what was Christy Burton Brown's response?
Big smile.
She didn't respond.
Right.
And then Sharona left and a bunch of people were turning their heads and asking what was that about. And the county chairman suggested that it was not a topic that was on the agenda for the day and we weren't
going to let okay. Yeah, that's right.
Okay. I mean, well, but you know, in fairness,
it wasn't,
I think it raised awareness and a lot of people probably, you know, rushed off after the lunch to look it up.
Right.
See what it's about.
All right,
and people who wanted to know, I briefed a few of them on it. After the luncheon, people who came up to me and said, what was that about? I told them what it was about, and that's that. So I think I don't know where this is going. It might go nowhere, but I think that Christy made a huge blunder.
No, I agree.
All right, Maurice, listen, well, thank you for coming on our show.
We appreciate it.
You were great.
Coming right out of the courtroom and all that.
Yeah,
and,
really. So I hope you get a more relaxing rest
okay,
of your
good.
Day. All right.
Have a good party Friday.
All right.
Okay, good. Nice talking to you.
Thank you. Maurice Emmer there. Hey, guys, that will kind of wrap it up for us. Thank you.
It's over.
I know. Thanks
we're
to
done.
Scott S. Powell. Thank
done.
You for Maurice for taking time on a very busy day. All the great guys, Thomas and Don and Doug at BBS Radio. We love having all you guys on Zoom, too. I'm sorry we didn't get to read as many of the comments as we
They're
do sometimes.
Good.
Yeah.
They're always good. So everybody take care. We're off to a birthday party, and you have a good time.
That's right. We'll see you on Monday. Have a great weekend.